So let's call a meeting to order. And the first item on the agenda is the public comment. It's a period devoted to comments by the general public about those items appearing on the agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Please step forward and clearly state your name and spell your last name for the record. If any member of the committee wishes to extend the length of presentation, this may be done by the chairman of the board or by majority vote. Is there anyone to be heard during the public comment period? Next item on the agenda is the adoption of the December 11, 2019 agenda. Does anybody have any questions or comments or changes concerning the agenda? If not, I ask for a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes. Next is the report and discussion action items, and the first is the approval of the Finance Committee meeting minutes of October 30, 2019. And so I would open that for discussion. Anybody have any questions or changes, comments for the minutes? They looked okay to me. So I'd ask for a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Okay. Approved. Well, that went quickly. Let's hope the rest of the meeting goes well. The next item on the agenda is a review and discuss the audit and approve recommendations to the Board of Health for our December 19, 2019 meeting. Ernest, do I turn this over to you?
Sure. I'll just take just a brief minute, and then I'll pass the mic over to our auditors who are here representing. Just to give a little bit of context, we began the process of an implementation of our new electronic health record system back in 2017, and that was to be the chosen platform for the capturing of electronic health records. The process to implement that was not completed at the end of this past fiscal year. It basically involved an enterprise-wide effort related to the conversion of a paper-based system to now an electronic system. When it came time to prepare reports for our auditors, we found that there were errors in the reports generated from that system. The errors were complex in nature. They had to do with multiple sources, demographics entry, coding, eligibility, identification of insurance, things like that. We discovered that was affecting a revenue stream, which was playing a part in the overall revenue picture that we wanted to be able to present to our auditors confidently. And what we discovered is with those errors, we could not do so at that time. The team pulled themselves together along with our business partners both here in the district as well as with our third-party billing agency and did a yeoman's effort. And I wanted to acknowledge the efforts of all of our team members and their partners to be able to make this happen in correcting the errors that were leading to the report that was incorrect and basically presenting and pulling together a plan for going forward such that these will not reoccur. We also worked very closely with our IT partners to reconfigure the system in such a way that will help us train our staff going forward as part of an ongoing effort to make sure that these don't happen again. We fixed the errors. We were able to confidently present a revenue report to the auditors, which we thoroughly tested. They then tested and felt confident that it fully represented our entire revenue picture, and have included that in our in the audit report, which you have before you. I'd like to pass the mic now over to Tammy,
okay,
and let her speak through the rest of the audit.
Well, before we do that, did anybody have any questions?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have asked for that.
I don't yet. But
okay.
So, Tammy, why don't you state your name
okay.
for the record?
I am Tammy Miramontes. I serve as the engagement partner on the Health District Audit, and with me are Brett Luby and Richard Walker, and they are both managers who served on the audit as well. So, while we did have to, there was an extension that was requested it was successful because I think everybody remembers the last time we were here, we said if we can't get good information, we'll have to modify our opinion, which is not something we would want to do. And so the effort was very successful because we were able to get accurate information to be able to audit that system. So with that, we actually are able to issue in our draft report, it is an unmodified opinion over the financial statements, which means that they are materially correct as they have been presented, that the users of the financial statements can rely on them. So that was what we were going for, and we're glad that we were able to accomplish that. In addition to that, we also issued two other reports. So in conjunction with the financial statements, we issue a report in accordance with government auditing standards, and that is looks through internal controls over financial reporting as well as non-compliance with laws and regulations and grants. And if we identify anything, then that is reported in that report. As far as material non-compliance, we did not identify anything to be reported. And I guess if you wanted to follow along, let me find those pages. Page 57 and 58 is the report I'm referring to of this draft. So while we did not identify any material non-compliance, we did identify a material weakness with the financial reporting, and that is really related to this collection, the implementation of this new system. We did feel that there were some internal control issues that needed to be resolved on a going forward basis whenever you are implementing, and Richard will be going into that a little bit in further detail. And then our final report is in relation to the federal money that you receive. So as a district, you spent $16.2 million in federal money. And that is detailed out in your schedule of expenditures of federal awards, which is on pages 62 through 68 of this report. And so from there, what we do is we identify what are major programs, and there are dollar thresholds that we have to go through to determine what is a major program. And then we test those major programs and we give an opinion on compliance. And the programs that we tested this year were the Public Health Emergency Preparedness, Family Planning Services, National Bioterrorism, and HIV prevention. And we did not identify any non-compliance that was of a nature that would result in material non-compliance. However, we did identify some deficiencies in internal control, or one, which we identify as a significant deficiency versus a material weakness. A material weakness is something that could result in material non-compliance. Significant deficiency, we don't believe it would result in material, but it's significant enough that we think it warrants your guys' attention. So that's the difference. Not quite as extraneous as material weakness.
So we in the hierarchy of issues, so material weakness is
the worst.
The worst. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yep, and a significant deficiency is less. And then sometimes we just have control deficiencies, which they're just kind of minor tweaks to your controls that really we discuss with management. They're not really, they're just like, hey, maybe you guys should think about this. But the ones that are written and required to be written are significant deficiencies and material weaknesses. And so with that, Richard, if you would like to go through the two deficiencies.
Absolutely. So I'm Richard Walker. I'd like to discuss the two issues that we identified. First, on the financial statement side, the material weakness that Tammy mentioned, which has to do with the clinical, medical revenue, and
are
receivables.
You on the page number, just so we can
it's page 72. There is a slight issue with the page numbering in the last four or five pages, but the number is 72.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So this is finding number 2019-001. We've already touched on it a little bit, but I'll go a bit more in depth. So this is the medical billing issue that Ernest spoke about. The criteria for this is, you know, government entities, obviously every entity needs to have controls that are sufficient to make sure that all billing, all revenues, all receivables are properly reconciled and billed in a timely manner at the end of each period. In this case, because of the implementation issues, that was not the case for the district. There were some significant delays in some of the final billings and reconciliations and estimates and allowances weren't able to be calculated until very late in November. The cause, as we interpret it, based on our discussions with management and, you know, review of the situation, is as we've already discussed, the process of implementing a new software, and also it wasn't touched on by Ernest, but the billing clearinghouse was also changed. Those two things happening at the same time ended up being somewhat of a perfect storm to cause this issue, to where the district was unable to properly identify how much revenue was billed, if it was billed appropriately, what the receivables associated with that revenue ought to be until very late in the game. So the effect of that, obviously, is that potentially a weakness like that could cause the financial statements to be materially misstated. We believe that through the audit work we were able to perform that they are not materially misstated, that they are materially correct, but that is the potential effect of this.
So I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, may I ask a couple questions? So where is the bottom line of what number, where is that? What page is that shows how much should have been billed, how much we've collected? Do you have that in your audit?
That's not a specifically carved out number. I can show you what the amount that was recorded. If we go to, I believe it's page 14, but let me double check. Yes, page 14. There is a deferred inflow number, so it's about seven lines from the bottom, $213,000. This is the net amount of the charges that were not reconciled until a late date. This is the net number of the gross charges less the estimate for what would actually what would be unallowed or uncollectible based on the third-party payers. So this is the net number there.
So how much did we actually bill for, though?
In the neighborhood of around $800,000.
So where does that show up in the audit? I mean, I like this time that you guys have it spelled out, all the different grants. I've been asking that for a long time so that we can keep a better handle. But where does that show up? Does that show up in the general cash equivalents and then it's deducted out through this piece?
So it is a component. It's not specifically shown as its own independent line item. It is a portion of accounts receivable. Is there a footnote?
I was just trying to see if the net amount, the net of the allowance is in here.
Yeah.
That should be added.
Yeah.
I mean, for us as a board, I just think that we got to know that it's paying for itself and not just the bottom line. So I just had it assumed here in the audit when we did the audit that would show us if it's on track or not on track, but I know your part is to make sure that it shows up. But if I need to ask that it be a specific line item so that we can see if the programming is paying for itself, I want that in the future as opposed to just putting it all back into the cash.
So which specific? So you want it, do you want to know the entire revenue? Because this is only the amount of revenue that was not collected as of. This is the billing issue. Are you looking for?
Well, I want to know how much we generated from it, right? So it just seems that if it's a standalone program, because it is, and it's like, and I'm super appreciative that you spelled out all of these different grants, right? So we could, we've been asking as a board for this for a long time to know what those grants look like. So I hope that it stays this way.
Yep. And these have always been included. This CFEP, the Scheduled Expenditures of Federal Awards.
I don't think we've ever seen it like this, though, how it goes across. I've never seen it in this detail. I pretty much try to follow the audits. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it in this detail, but I could have missed it. But, I mean, I'm just wondering if in the future I won't be able to see it, so I'll just have to ask the question at the board on what that generated, because you're only required to show me this piece. Is that right?
I think, well, this is the level of detail that the financial standards require. But in the back, I mean, you could always
sure.
spell out more, you know, different levels.
When you refer to the program paying for itself, the new software, is that
yeah,
what's flowing through there versus what we've, okay, yeah, we can probably.
Just so that we have a better idea of what we're billing.
Of course.
And what we're actually collecting, because I can't believe, I mean, I'll just tell you, UMC doesn't go out and do collections, they end up having to write them off because you get such a small percentage. So I'd just like to see what we're billing somewhere.
So,
gross
charges, less adjustments.
Yeah, in a different management, probably, and it's part of our MD&A, right? We can.
Would that
yeah.
be part of the controls that go in that we're putting in place?
I mean, it's a component, but that's always been happening. The only thing that changed is that rather than keeping paper records, the records are now electronic. That's like the only real substantive change.
No,
in
I
the
get
process.
I get it, but there is. I mean, when it was presented to the board and we got it, there is a third party person who is solely going to be responsible. We have since brought some of it back in house, which that was never a discussion that we heard.
Didn't bring it back in house. Did bring it back in house. We do.
I just were at the last meeting that we said we brought some of it back in house for Dr. Eiser.
No.
So if we were able to have the clinical medical revenue and receivables, if we were able to show those separately, is that what you're thinking?
Yep.
That we could see that and then see if what we had to write off or what was uncollectible in
right.
that?
Well, and honestly, so that we could just see that we're keeping pace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I apologize. I could have sworn at the last meeting, but I was a little heated that you guys said that we brought some of it back in house.
No.
If you're saying no, then stick my memory.
Do you want to see just the electronic health record software pay for itself? But do we pay the clearinghouse as well to collect the funds? So do you want both things itemized to see if that's coming, we're recovering the cost for both or just one?
I mean, the more information for me is better.
Okay. We can do that. We can have a breakdown of that. It's we're not paying anybody to collect. You know, we're not in that, we don't go to that level of securing payment, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
We make reasonable attempts to secure payment, but we don't send somebody to collections.
Okay.
We work through our third party agency who's here represented, and they also, or they prepare for the clearinghouse, which then gets submitted to the insurers, which we have contracts with, which we have agreements with. So that's where we go at this point. But we don't do, just to clarify, we don't do anything, we don't do billing in-house. We correct errors, we provide information, but we don't do the billing from here for this.
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the question of the commissioner, because and I know it's not related to the audit in my question, but I think what I'm curious about based on the line of questioning is the collection rate compared to other health districts or other service providers and how we compare on both on private insurance and Medicaid. Is that?
Yeah, we can, I don't have that with me.
No,
right
no,
now,
I know,
but,
I know,
yeah,
but that would be maybe at a future
helpful.
Board meeting. It'd
yeah.
be super helpful for me to understand that as well.
Sure.
How we compare to other agencies.
Okay.
I'm sorry to take this off a little bit.
No. Okay. Just following up on that, Doc, back to Marilyn's initial question. So what you indicated is there was about $800,000 that you were not comfortable with because of the way the billing situation had changed. Is that correct? Is that the kind of the dollar figure we're looking at?
Yeah, at that point, that was the gross figure.
Okay. Yeah. So if that's the gross figure, then the $213,000, what is that number? That is that what was not collected, or is that what was?
That's the net total. So that's a net of the what's estimated to be uncollectible based on the third-party payer's remittance rates. Yeah.
So that's what you are expecting to collect.
The 213 is what
the
we...
The 213 out of the 800, is you're what we expecting will. That you're only going to get 213,000 of it.
Okay.
And because it is all... The only reason you're seeing it like this is because it was all not collected within 60 right. days of year end, so then it's shown the way that government auditing standards requires so, is you're, sure. you get to see that full picture this time.
Okay.
And so next year, will that show, will it be balanced out, or will it just not even be on the audit?
It probably, well, the majority of it will not be, because the if you are collecting as you go, you know, now that the system is working, then it will show as receivable, and then the net amount will show, so you would still be able to see what is outstanding, but you won't see the entire picture of the revenue that was billed and collected. And I think that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, so I need to ask for the budget hearing, I think, probably, to spell it out.
Yes.
But I was just wondering if it's a weakness, then typically anytime you have a weakness, you have to go back and correct it and fix it and balance it out.
Yes, and, yes, and
so
I think...
So I'm wondering if next year we'll see it too, so that if this is a hypothetical, that if we don't collect that amount, it'll have to be zeroed out somehow to balance the budget, right?
So,
no, well, I don't know. Probably, you know, so this 213, I mean, so if there is any, whatever that net is next year, as far as at the end of the year, whatever is the estimate of what would, you know, be collectible versus not collectible. So say it's 213 this year, it might be 200 next year, so you have a $13,000 adjustment potentially. So I think though, I mean, it sounds like what you're really looking for is the revenue number itself as to what was collected. So where we feel the internal control is, the weakness is with the implementation of the software and the system overall. And I think once that is working, and it sounds like it is working now sufficiently, and you have more programs you were going to bring into it.
That's it.
That it was really the implementation and the strategy of bringing that system online and making sure that it was actually working before you implemented it, and we're not able to bill.
Well, the only reason why I ask is because across all the agencies that I sit on, people in their audit have been, because the fiscal year cleared out, right? And so now you're putting those dollars in that they're having to go back and balance them. So whether it was the Water Authority, the Colorado River, the Clark County, we've all had to go back because the bill came in after the close of the fiscal year, and so that's why I'm asking, do I need to watch for that for next year?
So on the, is it on, if we look at the receivables, it's in the general fund?
It's in general fund receivables.
Oh yeah, so that unbilled receivable is
$213,000.
Yep. But then, it is on page 16, so it's in the general fund. So it's included in both the general fund and then on the government.
Yeah, so you'll see
in that position
an unbilled receivable for 213 and a deferred. That's it.
Inflow.
Can you go to the page? We need to fix this.
So from a revenue standpoint, it never hit revenue. It only hits the balance sheet.
So they never accounted for it, period.
So it is not, because of the timing of it, right, because of the timing of it, it is on the balance sheet only. So what if that money actually gets collected, it'll hit the income statement.
Okay. So just going back to page 72, which is your finder.
Yep, I've got one. I have one more to discuss after that.
Right, but the recommendation is clear here in terms of recommending the management review and modify the policies and procedures. And then the response is management agrees with the finding. I guess my question is, what is going to change so that we have a higher comfort level that these things are going to be done correctly going forward?
So part of it, so this response is just a really brief one, but then there should also be a corrective action plan that they are developing and working on that would really detail out what the plan actually is.
Okay. Included in that is going to be a training at each level of the data entry process, whether it be for intake, eligibility, all of the patient type, demographics, all of those points at which data is entered in, that we have training, that we have a very clear set of procedures for each one of those points, so that we don't encounter the errors that we've had before.
Yeah. And we'll have an opportunity to look at that.
Of course.
That's cool. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, that should be part of the materials that they give to you, is what the corrective action plan is.
Right. Okay.
Related to that. And then next year, as part of our audit, we will review what they said they were going to do in the corrective action plan and look to see if that was fully implemented or not.
Okay, great. And what's the timing of the corrective action plan?
That'll be throughout that'll be ongoing.
No, I mean in terms of the adoption or the identification.
We should have that wrapped up in the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
Yes, because it is required. So as part of the submission to the Federal Audit Clearinghouse, it is required that corrective action plan be submitted with the financial statements and the data collection form. So we'll need that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, because the cutoff is 30 days from the issuance of the financial statements, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions about that material weakness? If not, Richard, do you want to?
Happy to. So then the next and last finding is 2019-002, and that's a single audit-related finding, so a finding over the federal expenditures. And this is technically a repeat finding. It's one that was really in the process of being corrected during the year. And this has to do with specifically procurement, suspension, and debarment, and the fact that at last year we identified that the district's policies regarding procurement were not fully up to date and in compliance with uniform guidance requirements. And so the language here is very much exactly the same as it was last year. The caveat being that the district is in the process of, at the time of our audit, was in the process of finalizing and approving a new policy that is fully compliant with uniform guidance. And I believe that went to your policy team November, correct?
That is correct. In fact, it just we've gotten approval on that, and in the process of implementing it, we went through multiple iterations, as you might imagine, and we have it in place along with a procedures manual, which is the guide for implementing and making sure that happens.
So as I recall from last year, the issue was that at times we didn't find enough information or gather the correct information to determine what to bill people. And because the billing is dependent, or am I thinking that wrong issue?
Thinking a different issue.
Oh, okay.
That was
purchasing.
Yeah.
That's right. So it's how you allocate to different, because part of it is for federal.
Yeah, so federal money that's being used to procure goods or services has to follow uniform guidance procurement policies, which are different and in some cases more restrictive than what the state's Nevada revised statutes are for procurement. And so the prior policy, the one that was not compliant, it was leaning on the Nevada revised statutes for those rules. And in some cases those rules were absolutely compliant, but in certain key areas they were not compliant. There's carve-outs that are part of NRS that are not allowed under federal requirements. So,
Mr. Chairman, can I ask, so how far off are we from being completely done with those?
As I just mentioned to Scott here, we have a policy that has been approved through a policy committee. It's going to be presented before the Joint Labor Management Commission policy, I think later next week. And after which time it'll be signed and put in place by our acting chief health officer.
So I just would like, so the other thing that is not presented in here is our summary schedule of prior, or your summary schedule of prior findings, which is an update of the prior year. So you did mention the other finding as well, which, since it's not in here, was resolved.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, so that was that. So then we also just want to mention, or are required to mention, so we did have a couple of audit adjustments that were proposed that were more than trivial, that were required to be made. Those numbers are related to the clinical medical unbilled revenue, which was $806,000. And then the allowance plus $593,000, leaving $213,000 as the amount that we deemed to be collectible. And then there was another adjustment related to compensated absences.
Tammy, are you?
Oh, this is.
This is.
Gotcha. So we did, since it was, we did not provide this to you, so I didn't know that this was, if this was allowed to be presented or not, like in paper form.
Okay.
Yeah. For your, but we do wanted to, we just wanted to share with you that we did have some audit adjustments that we proposed that were made. So the one obviously is the big issue we've been talking about. There was a second one, which related to compensated absences, and it was an overstatement, and it was $98,000. That we proposed and was corrected, approximately $98,000.
So we overpaid $98,000?
No,
over accrued.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So no money left the building.
Okay. So I mean, can you explain it in layman's terms to me so I understand it?
Do you want to explain how it got over accrued?
Why don't you go ahead?
So the. Kind of, I guess, a little bit high level, but the accrual, the estimate for the compensated absences accrual, which it's a liability that doesn't show up on your fund statements, right. Just shows up on the government-wide level. Right. It included some compensated absences for Dr. Iser, which should not have been included. And so once those were removed that $97,000, and then it was properly stated.
Okay.
And that's just an entry that is usually done annually, not necessarily.
Yeah, just at the end of each year, it's estimated and then recorded.
Okay.
Other than that, I don't know that we had anything else significant that we needed to disclose. I know you did have some questions on some of the numbers. If there's anything we can walk you through, we'd be happy to.
I did. I'm just, as I said, this government accounting to me is a bit of a mystery at times. So trying to find some of the information that I'm looking for is difficult. So I'm going to ask you to help me with that.
Absolutely.
But one of the things is the change in net position. I wanted to be clear that that's the $4.1 million.
Yeah.
And that is the entity-wide. That
that's
is
entity-wide.
Full accrual,
right.
That includes your net pension liability, right. Your OPEB liability, your capital assets.
And so that's just an indicator of, are we moving in the right direction, or are we moving in the wrong direction, correct, in terms of
as
change in net position?
As an entity overall.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. It has nothing to do with your fund,
yes.
You know, day-to-day.
Yeah.
But yes.
Yes.
And the total net position is a deficit of $45 million,
mm-hmm.
And if you look, it's interesting. If you were to look at page 17, which shows you how you go from your fund balances, which are the government funds, and that's what you budget based on, to the ending net position, you go from almost a $34 million positive fund balance to a $45 million deficit. And it's really, if you look at it, really related to the $105 million, and it's all employee benefits. It's associated with pension, OPEB, compensated absences. That's what makes up that $105 million.
And so the ending fund balance, then,
uh-huh.
Is this almost $34 million. Is that
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that includes all of your governmental funds.
Right.
And so for the general fund, which is the operating fund, which a lot of people are most keyed into,
mm-hmm.
That
page 16,
that was $27.9 million, and that's on page 16. That's where your ending fund balance is,
mm-hmm.
for the general fund.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the one other question, or one other issue that I have, or was curious about, was the building fund or capital projects fund, sort of the number there, and how much that number is and what we use that for.
And so those, so that's those two funds, capital. So again, on page 16, there's a little caption that says capital projects funds, and there's two, the bond reserve and the capital projects. Combined, they're about $5.9 million. And in the notes to the financial statements, on page 25, it identifies for you the major funds and what the uses are for. So the bond reserve capital projects fund was to account for resources that have been committed to renovations of the new administration building. That's what that was designed for. And then the capital projects fund was to account for resources committed or assigned to the acquisition or construction of capital assets. So that one is for any capital assets throughout the district.
Okay.
Which can include more than just buildings, right?
Yeah.
Technology can include...
Right. Vehicles,
yeah,
software.
Thank you. That
and
me.
Can that capital money only be used for capital?
Yes.
Can we?
In this case, you can reallocate it because it's only assigned, so it is not restricted by any external parties. So. There's the hierarchy of fund balances.
Right.
There's the non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned. Assigned is just it can be reallocated by the board. The committed is a little bit harder, and again that's defined in here. I don't know if it was Dr. Iser or you. There's it identifies in here who has the authority to assign fund balance. Obviously the board always has the ability to reassign your fund balance.
Which is me.
And it says the health district's director of administration is who you've delegated authority to also be able to assign fund balances.
But at the end of the day, the board, as they approve the final budget, can reassign anything. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Directly.
Without formal resolution by the Board of Health. You have the ability to move that money. Now, if you were going to move it out of those funds, you are going to have to do a transfer through
through
NRS budgets.
State,
yeah.
That's fine. It's just I don't ever, shame on me for not paying attention. I don't remember saying that was a great idea to assign it to somewhere. So, you have to ask better questions, seeing it.
Okay. Are there any other questions about the financials or the presentation today? If not, do you have anything else to present?
No, I just thank you for your patience in allowing us to apply for the extension. We recognize that it's an imposition to have another meeting and another board meeting next week. We appreciate your working with us.
No, we appreciate you and your team pulling this information together on that issue, and also to our vendor partner for doing the great work to get this done in this period of time, because in our last meeting it wasn't at all clear to me that we were going to be able to get this done in this time frame. So we appreciate that work and that effort. So thank you. So if that closes that agenda item.
Well, no, it includes the recommendation.
Oh, we have to vote on something, don't we? Okay, we've seen the financials. I guess what we need to do is make a recommendation that we move this forward and recommend for approval for the Board of Health.
So moved.
Second.
A motion and second. Any questions or changes? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It passes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is public comment, a period devoted to comments by the general public, if any, and discussion of those comments about matters relevant to the board's jurisdiction. Action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item on the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action may be taken pursuant to NRS 24.1020. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. If anybody is here to speak, please step forward. Seeing none, I'll close that portion of the meeting, the public comment, and we can move to adjournment. Thank you. John,
you gotta get out of the
plane. Oh, yeah, no, we just, I can imagine. I really. didn't know.
You're right.
Good job, Brett. Nailed it again.